Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Hey, besties.
Hello, sunshine.
Today on The Bright Side, we're calling in the one with licensed marriage and family therapist, Catherine Woodward Thomas.
She quite literally wrote the book on finding the love of your life in 7 weeks or less. So now, 20 years later, her book is popping up everywhere, and she's here to talk through how it works and why it's still making waves. It's Monday, April 22nd. Happy Earth Day, everybody. I'm Danielle Robay.
And I'm Simone Boyce. And this is The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine. Danielle, it's Earth Day, and this day reminds me of one formative core memory from childhood.
Tell me.
And that is eating those pudding cups with the cookie crumble on top and the gummy worm in it.
I don't know what that is.
You never had that?
No.
I used to have it in like elementary school on Earth Day because it looked like an earthworm and it symbolized our connection to nature.
That's so sweet. Every Earth Day, my mom used to grab garbage bags and gloves, and we used to go walk around the town that we lived in and pick up garbage. And I think because of that memory, I always say the only people that I don't like in the world are litterers.
I agree with you. Not a big fan of litterers.
Everybody else I love and accept and value, but litterers I cannot do. Obviously, Earth Day is incredibly meaningful, but one of the fun things I think you can do is think about the five best things you've ever seen on Earth.
I like that. What would be one of yours?
I saw two turtles making a baby one time, and that blew my mind.
So turtle sex.
No, that's not like miraculous, but I mean, animals are cool. Shooting stars are pretty amazing. I saw the Grand Canyon. That really was awe-inducing. How about you?
I think the Kwangse waterfall in Laos, it looks otherworldly. Looks like it's literally made by fairies, or fairies could be like flying above it. It's just gorgeous the way the water cascades through these rocks. That was definitely up there for me.
That's super cool. What'd you do this weekend?
I took my kids to meet Blippi. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Who's Blippi?
Blippi is a preschool YouTube personality.
Okay.
Yeah. Very educational, kind of like this generation's Mr. Rogers meets Pee Wee Herman, something like that. So we took them to go meet him at a little like educational event.
I had a very different weekend.
I can only imagine. I didn't see you at the Blippi event. It was weird. I was looking for you and you weren't there.
I went to a birthday party on Saturday night that started at 10 p.m. I haven't been out that late in so, like, I can't even believe that you could call a birthday party for 10 p.m., but the dress code was country chic, so I wore, like, an all-denim outfit circa Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, their, like, full-denim moment.
Nice.
I love costume parties, but they also stress me out because I never have time to go and get an outfit right before the party. So I try and make something in my closet work, and it's never quite as great as the people who really take time to get into it. I saw some great outfits, celebrated my friend Rachel, and I actually haven't had a drink in a really long time, and I had one drink.
Just one?
Just one. I like to wake up fresh. I can't handle too much. Well, Swifties spent almost all weekend listening to Taylor Swift's The Tortured Poets Department. And I see people online calling it a breakup album. Not different from her other albums. Some are love albums. This is a breakup album. But the one thing she did differently this time that stuck out to me was she put a bunch of positive messages out with the album drop. And I think she's sort of closing this chapter of her life.
Yeah, that's what I'm gathering from what she wrote on Instagram, too. She said, there's nothing to avenge, no scores to settle once wounds have healed. And upon further reflection, this is interesting. A good number of them turned out to be self-inflicted. So she's taking accountability here. I like this last part of what she wrote. She said, once we have spoken our saddest story, we can be free of it.
Nothing to avenge, no scores to settle. I think this is important because historically, her fans are so intense that they go after anybody who they even think has wronged her. Like, do you remember Jake Gyllenhaal or Joe Jonas? Like, her fans just go after people. I think this is her way of saying, like, don't do that. All good. No hate to my exes. The only drama I've kind of seen come from this album is a song, Thank You, Amy. And the K-I-M in that title is capitalized. So everybody thinks it's about Kim Kardashian. And there's some drums around that.
So she's taking ownership for her part in everything and moving forward, but just with a little bit of drama thrown in.
I just feel like she's saying two opposite things. She's saying, I'm taking accountability, no hate. And she's saying, all's fair in love and poetry. I'm putting it out there.
At the end of the day, she's an entertainer, and this is all for entertainment value. And she is so good at creating a narrative and drumming up this incredible lore that keeps her fans engaged for decades now. I mean, here's what I love about this moment in time, and I loved the reaction to Beyoncé's album for this same reason. There are very few pieces of art or culture nowadays that unite everyone and draw our attention in the way that a Taylor Swift album drop does or a Beyoncé album drop does. I mean, I feel that way about like Game of Thrones when it was on. Everybody stopped what they were doing and they all watched it and digested it together. So this is an example of monoculture, and it feels like we don't have that many instances of that that we can point to nowadays.
You're right about monoculture. I think this indicates kind of a new wave, which I like. Okay, another thing worth talking about is that there was a recent study published that says America is not as divided as we think it is. And I think we tend to think in our country right now that we're really divided. It feels that way if you log on to social media. But I want to share some good news that I read about on the state of our country right now, because I think it's going to make us all feel better. A recent poll by the Associated Press and the NORC Center for Public Affairs Research found that despite all of the polarization we feel in our country, we seem to agree on what it means to be American. So 9 out of 10 adults in the U.S. believe in the right to vote, the right to privacy, basically all of the First Amendment. And they feel like these are key parts of the American identity. I'm so tired of the polarization rhetoric. Mm-hmm. I get happy every time I read something like this.
We need this kind of good news right now. I mean, I look at our society today and it just feels so different from the environment that I grew up in as a 90s kid. I can remember my parents having friends that they disagreed with on just about everything in terms of politics. But that didn't stop them from being friends. And it seems like we've lost sight of that. And listen, I know that everybody has their deal breakers and their issues that are non-negotiables. But I think this is really encouraging. And this just reflects what I'm seeing whenever we have conversations offline, whenever we have conversations that aren't taking place on cable news shows. The extremes just drive a lot of that conversation and that vitriol and that tension.
We have become divided because we are physically divided. And so the more togetherness we have, the less the divisiveness seems like the end-all be-all, because you can be around a dinner table full of people that you disagree with and you can have a conversation face-to-face that seems interesting or fine to have. When you are disagreeing on the internet, people get irate. And I think that's like a huge difference here. But I always try to remind myself, like I'm a student of history, and I remind myself that America has been held together through way worse times than now. Mm-hmm. We can get through this time. We just need a few more dinners.
Exactly. A few more dinner parties. Dinner parties cure everything. Yeah, I love that you brought up that example of how we've lost sight of that socialization that we had in like the 80s and before. I'm someone who has a very ideologically diverse group of friends, and I don't see that all that often. But what I've observed in my group of friends, where I have people who are more on the right, people who are more on the left, a lot of them are saying the same things behind closed doors. And a lot of them feel fear about expressing their true opinions and expressing how they really feel about certain issues. And I often find myself thinking, wow, I just wish I could bring these groups together and let these conversations out and give people a space where they feel like they could be truly honest.
Yeah, I think our values have really been politicized in the last few years, but I personally welcome uncomfortable conversation. Like, I really like hearing from people that I disagree with. It doesn't mean they're going to change my mind, but I like hearing where they're coming from and why. There's usually a story behind it.
Well, also, whenever you have conversations with people that you disagree with, it helps you understand your positions better and it helps you understand your own values better.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, up next, can we really find the love of our lives in just 7 weeks? Well, we'll find out after the break.
Simone, I hear you have a new hosting gig coming up.
You mean besides this podcast?
Yes, this podcast. But also, you're going to be hosting your house on Airbnb?
It's true. I'm going to be traveling a bit coming up, and it felt like the perfect opportunity to earn a little extra cash, baby.
I love your house.
I love my house, too. And it's great for families because it's already set up for traveling with kids. We have bunk beds. We have an extra stroller. We have toys galore. Traveling with kids can be a real challenge, so I'm always looking for ways to make that process easier. When I've stayed at friends' homes or hotels, they don't always have what I need for my family.
That's so true, and you've got it all at your place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a win-win. I'm not worried about my house sitting empty, and I love that I get to show someone around my neighborhood without having to physically show them around my neighborhood, you know?
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Simone Boyce. So we've been seeing this book everywhere. It's called Calling in the One, 7 Weeks to Attract the Love of Your Life. A friend of mine found her perfect match this way, Danielle. Celebrities have been posting about it. Book clubs are reading it together. And apparently it works for a lot of people. Interestingly enough, this book came out 2 decades ago, and it's having a renaissance now.
I have been seeing it all over TikTok.
Right?
And we have the creator of this renowned method with us today. Catherine Woodward Thomas is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's also the best-selling author of Calling in the One, 7 Weeks to Attract the Love of Your Life. And if you remember the term conscious uncoupling made popular by Gwyneth Paltrow years ago, that was Catherine's phrase. Catherine, welcome to The Bright Side.
Oh, it's so great to be here with you guys. Thank you for having me.
This feels like a treat.
Oh,
I'm about to get a masterclass in love.
We all are, because I know there are a lot of applications of this method outside of just calling in a romantic relationship. So we're going to get to that later. But Catherine, Danielle and I have been dying to talk to you about Calling in the
Ask
One.
Ask me anything.
Yes. We love a carte blanche interview. As I mentioned, it's all over my timeline. People are still raving about it. But I want to start by just breaking down what this method is. So what is it and how does Calling in the One work?
Okay. So most great dating advice is kind of external to us. This is what you should wear. This is what you should say. Wait 5 minutes before you answer a text. You know, don't appear too available. You know, all of those great little tips and helpful things. But Calling in the One is very different because it's really about aligning your internal consciousness with the future that you're committed to creating. Now, most of us, when it comes to love, are carrying history books of disappointments, kind of mixed messages. We remember when we were 12 and our friends got bras before we did. We remember, you know, the dynamic between our parents or between ourselves and our older siblings. You know, we kind of have a lot going on about this concept of love. And basically, when we're talking about love, we're talking about who really sees me? Who do I feel safe with? Who do I feel supported by? Who is there for me, really? So it's very core and primal. So calling in the one is very informed by your history, and it kind of understands the psychology of the repetition compulsion and how we all have patterns and how we're the source of our patterns. And we actually start in a really unlikely place. And that's with the future that you're committed to creating. And this inquiry, like, who would you need to be in order to manifest the relationship you want? How will you need to grow? What are you going to need to let go of? And how can you actively begin to co-create that? What's your next step to co-create with the universe and manifest that miracle of love?
I'm so glad you used the word manifest just now, because the approach is really about manifesting that person. And you ask readers to set a, quote, miraculous intention to meet their person. So, for example, by the summer of 2024, I will have met the love of my life. Why is that part, that futurizing, important for the process?
So there's so much now happening, you know, around manifestation. It's like the big buzzword, right? We all want to know, what's my, you know, how much agency do I have to impact the future? And a lot of us have kind of... we kind of grew up being a little passive about the future. So what's waking up in the collective is this sense of agency. Like, wow, I really can influence what does and doesn't happen. But I'll also tell you that research has demonstrated this. I mean, way back in the 1980s, there was research done on the positive possible self of the future, but they actually demonstrated that when you're living into a possible self of your future consciously, because most of us do have a possible self of the future and it's negative. It's like more of the same.
Oh, interesting.
Like, we're afraid we're always going to be single, or no one will ever love us, or we're going to die alone, you know, something like that. So if you actually consciously cultivate, wow, what does it feel like to be me being loved and supported and happy and having overcome my past and, you know, really located my core value and my, you know, my and access to the power that I have to grow healthy and strong, if you're living into that future, it will begin to motivate you to show up very differently in the present. So how we're showing up has everything to do with what we're generating.
When you say living into the future, what if you can't envision that? Because I do believe you have to see it.
Yes.
To achieve it?
Yes.
What if you don't know what the dream house looks like, or the dream? I have no idea what the face of my future partner looks like.
Well, you don't need to know the face, but you do need to start to cultivate a connection with what it might feel like to be really seen.
Okay.
And it's an active imagination process. That's what the visioning process is. And you're kind of trying on as best you can, and you might just get slivers of what that might feel like. Because maybe you feel that way when your dog comes and greets you at the end of the day, you know, just it's unconditional love. Mm-hmm. So you do know the experience. You know the experience from moments in your life with maybe a child or your mom or your sister or your friends. So if you are overly identified with what I call the traumatized self of the past, or your wounded self, you know, the part of you that was never good enough, the part of you that was always put down, or the part of you that was abused in some way. So you're still emotionally kind of anchored in, it's not really safe to open myself up to love. So then you have to wake yourself up to what else might be more true. Because if you really ask yourself, well, where is that self in the body? Mm-hmm. And you'll, you know, you can kind of usually feel it like a heaviness on your heart, or you're going to feel it like, you know, kind of a sick feeling in your belly. And then you say to yourself, sweetheart, how old are you? And you recognize this is a younger part of you. Now, whatever was happening back then that gave you the idea that you weren't safe, you didn't have a lot of resources to deal with it. You didn't have a lot of support. And it was completely overwhelming because you couldn't really comprehend it with any sense of complexity or sophistication. So the ability to then speak to yourself and say, you know what, honey, love is dangerous if you don't have good boundaries, if you don't know how to actually, you know, assert your feelings and needs in a healthy way. But guess what? We have the power to learn those skills. And I am the source of safety in love for myself and for others. So that's the part that needs to be in charge of love, mm-hmm. and not that younger wounded self.
Ooh, I wasn't planning on doing inner child work today. I got to be honest. I did not wake up and see this in my day for today.
You emphasize the concept of calling in the right partner rather than finding the right partner. What's the difference?
You know, we all live in such a go get them, make it happen kind of world. We kind of really trust the logic of how to create something that's pretty wonderful. Mm-hmm. If you want a PhD, you can probably research graduate schools and figure out what tests you need to take or what you need to do to get into that school, how you're going to make the money to do it. It's pretty laid out before you. But when you want to create true love, it's a really different system. You can't make true love happen. You can really only make it welcomed and create the conditions for it and become who you would need to be in order for that future to happen. So it's almost like if you're going to go for the Olympic gold, you can't know from the start you're going to win the gold, but you go all in to create the right conditions for that possible thing to happen to you. So when we're talking about, you know, making it happen, mm-hmm. which is a little bit of going out to find that person, you're going out with your mental self, your list, and what your criteria is. So you're listening to your intuition. What's my next step? What would I need to give up? Well, probably, you know, the hope that my ex-boyfriend is going to come back.
I'm glad you brought that up because you talk a lot about letting go in order to let love in. So what are some of the things that you're asking your readers to let go of?
You know, I always trust how it comes to it. So there's this whole in the calling in the one, it's written as a 49-day course. So it's just get a little bits and pieces each day, things to do, which we all love. We love roadmaps.
Is that 7 weeks?
That's the 7 weeks, 49 okay. days, yes. And that's, you know, and where did that come from? I mean, I wrote the book 20 years ago. I must have just been reading something about Siddhartha or Buddhism or something, because that's how long Siddhartha sat under the Bodhi tree before he became enlightened, you know. So anyway, that's where it came from.
Yeah.
But I think we all know what there is to let go of. I need to let go of drinking every night, or I need to let go of dimming down to try and not be a threat to other people and pretending to be less than I am. I need to let go of how hard I am on myself. I need to let go of settling for less because I don't think I'm really going to do any better. Mm-hmm. I need to let go of tolerating selfish people in my life and accommodating them and not confronting them when they dismiss me and my needs. I need to let go of being conflict avoidant. You know, we kind of know.
This is so good. This is so good.
Well, this is good for even being in relationship.
Yes.
How do I actualize the potentials of that relationship? And I do have a lot of people coming and doing calling in the one, and the future that they're committing it to is, my partner and I are thriving. Mm-hmm. You know, we are doing great. We are expanded in our love. So, you know, you can start with that future too.
I love that. I kind of want to do this with my husband. Does anybody ever do that?
Yes, they do. And my wildest story about that is I had a whole family of, there were six grown-up children who lived all over the United States and their two parents, and they met once a week and they all did the course together.
Both men and women?
Yes.
Wow. Because one of the things I find is that I hear women talk about this book all the time, and I kind of wish more men were doing it too.
Well, I think just men need to be invited and know that it's their thing. I mean, look, men are valued a lot in the culture traditionally. That's changing fast. But, you know, traditionally men have been valued for what they can make happen. So, you know, that kind of hero agency to go and, you know, make it happen. But this is a different system. And you might say it's a more feminine system of creativity.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Simone, I hear you have a new hosting gig coming up.
You mean besides this podcast?
Yes, this podcast. But also, you're going to be hosting your house on Airbnb.
It's true. I'm going to be traveling a bit coming up, and it felt like the perfect opportunity to earn a little extra cash, baby.
I love your house.
I love my house, too. And it's great for families because it's already set up for traveling with kids. We have bunk beds. We have an extra stroller. We have toys galore. Traveling with kids can be a real challenge, so I'm always looking for ways to make that process easier. When I've stayed at friends' homes or hotels, they don't always have what I need for my family.
That's so true. And you've got it all at your place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a win-win. I'm not worried about my house sitting empty. And I love that I get to show someone around my neighborhood without having to physically show them around my neighborhood, you know?
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Catherine Woodward Thomas, you wrote this book 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's still, to this day, is something that people are gravitating towards. When I talk to people about dating that are older than me, they're always like, well, dating is just so different nowadays. Is it really? To me, it's kind of the same. It's just we have some technology.
You know, it is different and it is the same. And so the technology is clearly different, but the technology means that there's more choice. I think 20 years ago when I wrote it, there was this kind of emerging new paradigm back then of love between equal partners, both people holding power in love, which if you really look historically at how relationships have gone, was a very new thing. Mm-hmm. And then you do have a lot more choices, which has been shown to really stress people out and actually get in the way of making a decision. Mm. So you have to be very aware of what you like and what your life is about and what you're committed to. And so the calling in the one course, I think why it's hitting now is because it used to be when the book first came out, it was kind of for women over 35. It was really interesting. Women over 35 were finally like, oh, you know, I might want to have a family. This isn't really working for me. Let me be willing to go a bit deeper. Now it's across the board, women and men in their 20s, even in their teens, are more aware. And it's funny because my first husband, who I wrote, you know, I have the whole story about how I met him. I really did Calling in the One just for myself because I was not winning in this game of love at all. And I was, and I'd been on this healing transformative journey for so many years that I said, okay, let me just figure this one out. And I did it for myself and I manifest this great relationship with this wonderful man who is now officially my husband. So he was the inspiration for this book and for Conscious Uncoupling. But he was very intuitive. It was really interesting when I was writing the book. He's kind of an intuitive person. He meditates a lot and stuff. And he used to always say to me, Catherine, I don't think this book is really going to find its true home for at least 20 years.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
How prescient.
Yeah, he knew.
Catherine, you've built a career on teaching others how to cultivate love. After your first marriage ended, how did you pick up the pieces and how did it change your view of love?
You know, I think that we've all been really inside of the happily ever after myth so much. It's such a deep archetype in all of our psyches. I mean, I really had this horrible pattern of unavailable people, married men, engaged men, alcoholics, you know, workaholics, any size, shape, form, you know, of impossible loves. And it really was so painful. And here I am, you know, trying to figure it out. I end up going to graduate school to become a therapist. I'm so knee deep. Mm-hmm. But then I become like a good therapist for people who are in relationships. And I'm coming home to my empty apartment, you know, night after night with my little kitty cat Clover. So that felt really unfair. So I figured this out for myself and manifest this wonderful miracle, had a baby at the age of 43, then wrote a book. It became a national bestseller. Then I was teaching everyone. I mean, it was such a great, Disney could not have done any yes. better with this story. And then a decade in, it became clear to both of us that the marriage needed to transition and that we weren't right for each other anymore. And mostly it was me just having kind of outgrown the marriage in a lot of ways. So at the time it was quite shocking, and I really thought my career might have been over. You know, but the truth is that I've always been a person who's kind of hungry for truth and hungry for contribution. I always want to pay forward any kind of ounce of wisdom that I get. So I had to give up, though, you know, this idea of myself as this big teacher and choose truth. But I do remember the day that I realized this was going to happen. I actually drove to a park and I lay down on the grass and I just looked up to the sky and I prayed the only prayer that made sense to me at the time, which was, "Are you effing kidding me?"
Sometimes that's the best prayer.
What did you have to let, because you talk about letting go, when you were calling in your husband, what was the thing you had to let go of?
So there were a lot of things that were keeping me anchored in the past that I hadn't really noticed before. One of them is something I call old agreements. These are the agreements maybe you make with yourself, like, "I'm never going to get hurt like that again." Or an agreement that you made with a former partner, "I will never love anyone more than I love you." It might be vows you made in front of a priest before God, or it might be even a misguided loyalty you have with your mother who was always unhappy in love, and you kind of, you know, don't really want to go off and be happy in love and leave her alone. So these kind of very, very deep agreements we might have made that we completely forgot about. So when I was doing this meditation of trying on that possible future, really stretching myself to imagine who I might be inside of a future that I never had, and I remembered that now I'm in my early 40s when I'm doing this, but I remembered I had a high school boyfriend named Frank that I loved with all my heart. And we were in love the way a Romeo Juliet kind of, you know, that impassioned teenage love. We were together for 3.5 years. We were secretly engaged to be married. But when I turned 18, I wanted to go to college. He wanted to go in his family's business. It was just our lives were not on track for being together. So it was quite traumatic and very dramatic. And I was a bit of a drama queen back then, not like I'm not now, but I was.
I am too.
And I said to him, "Well, let's part ways now, but when we're in our 60s, we'll get together again and we'll marry then." Now, of course, you know, somehow it made me feel better, but he didn't listen to it at all. He married the next person and started having his family. So our relationship just kind of got torn, just wrenched apart. So here I am, 20-something years later. I'm still dreaming about him. I'm still wondering if he ever thinks of me, you know, and he's still like the gold standard of love, mm-hmm. right? My high school sweetheart,
yeah.
who nobody is ever measuring up to. So I realized I need to actually complete this agreement, and I call him into meditation. And I apologize for hurting him. I tell him I'm not going to keep that agreement. I cry in my tissues. And I'm done with it by the time I get off my cushion. And I felt liberated. And the funny thing about that story is that then I go and I meet Mark, we get married, form my fabulous life, Colleen the One is out. A mutual friend reads the book, recognizes who Frank is, calls Frank up, and tells him that I wrote this book and he's in the book. So I'm talking to Frank on the phone, because he connected us, and he's confessing to me that he dreamt about me for years too.
Wow.
And I said, "Well, when did they stop?" And he thought for a moment. He said, 8 years ago.
It's the cord.
It was the cord.
There's an invisible cord.
Yes.
And you have to cut it. Because if you feel it, I really deeply believe the other person feels it too.
They do.
How do you define the one? It sounds like you believe that everyone has more than one, the one out there.
I don't know that I do define that for people.
Okay.
I mean, there's obviously things that we're looking for, which is the experience of being safe, the experience of being seen and supported, the experience of love that can grow with you. You're definitely looking for shared values and shared vision. Which is not like a perfect match. But I think it's important to also remind people that even the best relationships have areas of incompatibility that mm-hmm. are pretty severe. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a morning person, they're a night person. Or, you know, you have a fast rhythm and they have a very slow rhythm. You like it hot, they like it cold. I mean, there's just, it's pretty consistent.
I had a therapist say to me one time, when you pick your person, you pick your problem, and you have to decide if you're okay with that problem.
Yeah. Look, really good relationships require that both people have good character, mm-hmm. that both people are available for commitment, and that both people have developed certain capacities to build trust. Because love is unconditional, but relationships are not. Relationships require trust. And that means things like keeping your word or having the humility to own your mistakes and make amends when you move forward. The ability to say no, to tolerate disappointing your partner when no is the right answer for you, to stay true to yourself and not abandon yourself. Mm-hmm. That's actually protecting love. The ability to hear someone else say no and set a limit and not withdraw or punish them. So those are the things that create trust. And that's what's going to help a relationship to actualize its potentials. So I'm more looking for those three things than, and I think we're very top heavy with charisma right now in our culture.
Riz.
Yeah.
I have a good solve for it.
Yeah?
Do you have one?
You go for it.
So, I used to be attracted to charisma, and it landed me in a relationship with a person that was just really not for me. And a therapist taught me to think about it in this way. Is this the kind of charisma, when you meet somebody, is this the kind of charisma that you would want your hypothetical future son to have? Are you proud that this is the person that you birthed and parented that is walking out in the world?
Wow.
If the answer to that is yes, it's a good type of charisma. And if the answer is no, it's an insecure charisma.
Charisma, to me, when it's pointed outward so that everybody shines, is beautiful. If it's charisma that's just about kind of, you know, me, I'm the center of attention, that's right. The one we want to be suspicious of. So when it comes to love, though, it's the revaluing of character, right? Good character.
Okay, I have to ask the obvious, because we've seen the success stories all over TikTok and Instagram, but it can't work all the time. There have to be people out there who've tried this, and maybe they didn't find the love of their life in that 7 weeks, or maybe it took longer, or maybe they're still looking for that person. So what would you say about the times where it hasn't worked? Is it something that maybe the person isn't doing right throughout this course, or something that they're missing in the course?
It could be. And then on the other hand, you know, there's different parts of us that, you know, might want to be single for a while. I mean, there's a lot of value to it. So calling in the one is not about devaluing the beauty of choosing to go deeper on your own journey. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, it's that. And sometimes, first of all, calling in the one, even though it's 7 weeks to attract the love of your life, it's a bit gimmicky, really. But, you know, because it's really about 7 weeks to being your best self who's ready and a choice.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And if I have someone come into my office and say, okay, are you going to promise me, guarantee me love in 7 weeks? I say, no,
Right.
We probably shouldn't work together because I'm not going to. But it does get you into the consciousness of the recognition that you do indeed have the power to do this, mm-hmm. that you're worthy of this. But one of the last lessons in week 7 is about how to relate to disappointments. So usually in the face of disappointments, we kind of collapse into it's not going to work for me because mm-hmm. I really am fated to be alone.
Those old patterns again.
Yes, it comes right up. We're not, you know, when you're talking about the old beliefs, I'm not an advocate to get rid of them. I'm just an advocate to get them out of the driver's seat and get them buckled up safely in the back seat and, you know, make sure that the adult, competent, wise self, the strongest part of you, is actually running the show here. Mm-hmm. So it's about being able to make empowered meaning of the disappointments. What am I learning? How am I being given an opportunity to do this differently this time? So that you're constantly able now to generate possibility for yourself.
You so generously brought Simone and I a copy of your book. And I said to you, I have a little resistance to reading your book. What does that mean?
That's actually a really common experience. And generally, the first place I explore is what the ambivalence is about having someone in your life, right? Because that's generally, it's going to be, I'm not really safe. I don't trust myself to not give too much of myself away or to get distracted mm-hmm. from what it is I'm committed to. So what calling in the one can do, though, is you might actually set an intention to be complete with your old stories in love and really only sourcing relationships from the strongest and wisest, healthiest part of you. That would be a really good intention to set.
I like that.
Yeah, and then it makes it less scary to do the work, because it's not like your person is right there, you know.
That sounds like something that could apply to our friendships, too. What do you think are the overlapping qualities between miraculous romantic relationships and miraculous platonic relationships?
Oh, I love that. I think that romantic relationships engage a more primitive part of us. Because there's something about going down to touch and sexuality that kind mm-hmm. of brings us right down into the core of our original bonding. And if the bonding patterns were untrustworthy, you know, you're an infant, you feel like you're going to die if you don't get food, you don't get water, if you're uncomfortable, your belly hurts, your diapers are dirty, you know, it's pretty severe. The risks are pretty high. You don't really know if someone's coming or not. So a lot of us, you know, we kind of engage that more primitive relational trauma in those early relationships because of the closeness of the connection. So that's not to say we are at the effect of that. It's really to say that we can build a relationship with that younger self and the awareness of what our projections are, what our assumptions are in any given moment. And it's easier to do than we think. You know, we think of the subconscious as this big, mysterious thing, and we have to, you know, meditate for years in a cave. But I don't think we really do.
Yeah,
do ayahuasca. There you go.
Heartbreak has totally changed me. When people tell me they haven't been heartbroken, I almost feel badly because I think it's a huge part of the human experience. And being in love has really changed me. I'm so curious as to the greatest lesson that you've learned in love.
Oh, that's beautiful. That love is not something to find, but to constantly generate and create. You know, when I look back on my first marriage with this really beautiful man, Mark, I was the one that kind of drifted out of the marriage. I got very preoccupied and with my work, and I didn't really scoop him in. I assumed that because we were married, we were together. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't yet developed the skill of creating togetherness and making sure that I always was including him in the growth that I was experiencing. So that was a big learning for me, that it wasn't just about getting married or getting the ring, that actually a marriage is just the container for the real relationship to now be created. So constant gestures of kindness, generosity, you know, going the extra mile for someone, just to keep creating and generating love. And I think that that's true with our friendships, with our family, you know, and to be future focused. Where are we going? What are we wanting to create other than this? And let that begin to inform how we're showing up.
Thank you for that.
I cannot wait to go back and re-listen to this interview because you dropped so many gems throughout this conversation. My jaw is just on the floor. And there are just so many beautiful takeaways and ideas that I want to keep reabsorbing and applying to my life. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
You shared so much with us and you share so much of yourself with the world. Thank you. That's it for today's show. Tomorrow, we're making money moves with Alexa Von Tobel. She's founder of LearnVest and Inspired Capital, and the author of a new book that teaches kids, especially girls, to be absolutely fearless about money. It's called Money Matters, a guide to saving, spending, and everything in between.
Listen and follow The Bright Side on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Simone Boyce. You can find me at Simone Boyce on Instagram and TikTok.
I'm Danielle Robay on Instagram and TikTok. That's R-O-B-A-Y.
See you tomorrow, folks. Keep looking on the bright side.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. On sale now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Simone, you may not know this, but I have been bitten by the travel bug. This time of year, I crave the outdoors and the mountains and adventure. They're calling to me.
I mean, we were both in Austin recently for work and also having a time. And as soon as I got home, I was already on Airbnb planning my next trip, possibly this summer. And while I'm away, I'll be hosting my home on Airbnb.
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.